Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast. Hajduk must be stopped. Last time, a little while ago on the podcast, Milan Miljanic left the scene for what will be an extended period. This time, we take a look at the man who replaced him as Yugoslavia's preeminent manager, Tomislav Ivic, and the Hajduk golden team he created. Although the Miljanic era wasn't the only thing to come to a close in 1974. That 1973-74 season would have been the last in which Velez Mostar would challenge hard for the league, as Europe would sap them this season, 74-75, and then, progressively, stars would begin to move elsewhere. Dusan Bajovic would also spend part of this season on his military service, robbing the team of their best goalscorer. All that, be it that load, ended up being carried by yet another rising star at Velez, Vahid Halilhodžić. As such, Hajduk's title win in 1974-75 was very much against the backdrop of other sides being in flux. Sveni Zvezda, now Miljanicless, were off the pace, but like Velez, had found their own new star in Dulia Savic. Meanwhile, Dinamo and Partizan were drifting to mid-table. Instead, the challenge came from Toza Veselinovic's Vojvodina, and they hung on to within 2 points of Hajduk until the penultimate week of the season, where they were dropped once and for all. Although, they did at least do the double over Hajduk, spanking them 4-1 at Stari Plac in March. However, that the other sides were in transition is not to undermine just how good this Hajduk team were. They were a better side than the season before. Brane Oblak would be nominated for the Ballon d'Or. Ivan Buljan and Drazen Muzinic would be named Players of the Year, with Ivica Suryak following the season after. They were a brilliant side, but, like many Hajduk sides, still contained a mental fragility which would hold them back when it came to going deep in Europe. And as good as they were this season, they were arguably better the following season. But that story is for later this episode, and to keep with the 1974-75 season, Hajduk made it a double, securing a 1-0 win over Borac Banja Luka in the final through a Mario Boljak goal. Dropping out of the top flight this season would be Bor and Proletaire Zrenjanin, and replacing them would be Budućnost and, having consoled themselves from that cup loss, Borac Banja Luka. When it came to Europe, Hajduk were about to be involved in controversy. Not in the first round. That was a predictably facile 9-1 aggregate progression over Iceland's Keflavik, in which both legs ended up taking place in split owing to, Iceland was far away, and not many sides were willing to go there. Icelandic sides playing both legs away at this point was very much the norm. Instead, the controversy would come in the second round, in Hajduk's tie against French champions Saint-Étienne. The French side were entering their pomp, sweeping all in France before them and being able to focus on becoming one of the best sides in Europe. It was about as uncomfortable a draw as Hajduk could have possibly received, and in the first leg, Hajduk simply tore them apart. Jurić Jerković opened up the scoring from an indirect free kick on the half-hour mark. Rivelli would equalise soon after, the ball held up on the ground after some pinballs put him through on goal. Come the second half, though, the floodgates opened. Hajduk pressed the French side to mistakes, and Savisa Zungul and Jerković would both benefit from being on the end of Suryak crosses from counter-attacks around the hour mark. Zeljko Mijac would round it off in the 81st minute to put the French side away 4-1 ahead of the second leg. The away leg, however, would be defined not around the action on the pitch, but the action off it. The game started normally enough. Saint-Étienne took the lead, but Mikon Jovanovic equalised from getting on the end of a deep cross with half an hour to go. At this point, the power went out for an entire half an hour. And after that half-hour break, Saint-Étienne came out flying. Within a minute, they took the lead and then just steamrolled Hajduk, eventually winning 5-1 after extra time. Hajduk, after taking a 3-goal lead from the first leg, were out 6-5 on aggregate. The truth of what happened in that half-hour, however, is relatively simple and has since been admitted to by former Saint-Étienne player Jean-François Loire. During the break, the players were given, in air quotes, medical supplements, which were quite likely amphetamines. The Saint-Étienne players came back out with limitless energy because they were doped to the gills. After the game, there are reports of the Saint-Étienne players being physically sick due to going well beyond their normal limits and players unable to sleep for days after it. Symptoms which would generally tie in with the intake of illicit substances, specifically amphetamines. And at the end of it all, the European Cup itself finished in controversy, with the final between Bayern Munich and Leeds ending in rioting after a game that had been refereed peculiarly, resulting in two Bayern Munich players suffering injuries that would eventually result in their retirement. Leeds, for their part, would see penalty calls turned down and a goal controversially disallowed. Violence broke out after the game, and the result was that Leeds would be banned from Europe for 4 years, something that they obediently stuck to by failing to do very well until the 1980s anyway. The UEFA Cup would be, for Yugoslav interest, dominated by a game against an English side. In the first round, both Partizan and Velez played sides from the East, Partizan knocking out Gornik Shabreshi 5-2 and Velez getting beyond Spartak Moscow on away goals. Partizan would then ease past Northern Ireland's Portadown in 6-1 in the second round, while Velez squeezed past Rapid Vienna 2-1. Both would be in the last 16 and both would be given challenging ties. Partizan to Kern and, most famously, Velez Mostar against Dave Mackay's Derby County side, a team on their way to winning the English League that year. Partizan, for their part, managed a 1-0 win at the JNA, but were then demolished 5-1 in West Germany to depart the competition. Velez, meanwhile, became involved in an epic tie that rates it as one of the best European ties of the decade, never mind of that season. The first leg would be at the baseball ground, in what could charitably be described as a swamp, and it would open well for Velez. A half-cleared ball would fall to Franjo Vladic, dispatched it into the bottom corner to put Velez in the lead in only the second minute. Derby, however, rolled back late. Jeff Bourne with a clever header to equalise in 72 minutes. 5 minutes later, Alan Hinton would turn and finish well to take the lead with a great goal before Bourne got his second and Derby's third with a scuffed finish with only 5 minutes to go. Derby had taken their time but showed their quality late and would take a 2-goal lead on the way to Moscow. A fortnight later, 30,000 people turned out in Moscow to witness the second leg. Velez, a side whose own players would always claim rose to the big occasion, rose to arguably the biggest result of their history to that point. Boro Primorac would score from the spot on 12 minutes. Pekelia would put Velez in front on away goals just before the half hour, before Vladic scored his second of the tie to put the team in front properly. Kevin Hector levelled the tie for Derby a couple of minutes later, and the stadium went immediately from elation to anxiety. But cometh the hour, cometh the prince. 5 minutes from the end, Derby would commit a foul in the box and Dusan Bajovic would set up, slam the ball home, send Velez into the quarter-finals. Derby would protest and cry foul to UEFA, but to no avail. Velez would make it no further in the competition, falling to FC Twente in those quarter-finals, but the generation's defining result and their last hurrah had been made. They would fall away the following season with Sula Rebac leaving the club to new hands for the next generation. A generation heralded in his final season by the arrival of a new special talent, Blaž Šuškovič. Hajduk's crack at the European Cup the following season would fall in similar fashion to the season prior, albeit this time in the quarterfinals. It began with an elementary win over Maltese champions Floriana, helped along the way by a Seviso Zengul hat-trick in the first leg. The second round would pit them against Belgian champions Molenbeek, and another easy win, 7-2 over the two legs to take them to a big challenge in the quarters, PSV. Just like against Saint-Étienne, they were dominant in Croatia. Mijac with a steepling header to put Hajduk in front and Suryak with a header at the back post to double the lead. Hajduk took that two-goal advantage to the Netherlands and it would last until five mad second-half minutes. PSV would begin with a deep cross evading the entire defence and dropping to Dahlqvist unmarked at the back to hammer it home at the near. 4 minutes later, PSV would equalise thanks to the improbable. A loose throw from the back would see a long shot clatter off a defender, looping up and hitting the bar with Harry Lubse on the end of the ensuing stramash to nod home. Hajduk's fragility had cost him again, and Willy van der Kooyen finished the tie in extra time, with his shot from the edge of the box sliding between Ivan Katalinic's legs, and Hajduk were out with the footballing equivalent of a Bill Buckner moment. Yugoslavia would have a goalkeeping representative in the final at least, Ivan Kukovic in the goal of Saint-Étienne. He would later become president of Partizan and higher up at the Serbian FA, but would not be victorious in this final, conceding just before the arrow markers Bayern Munich managed the three-peat. Borac Banjaluka would ease through the first round of the Cup Winners' Cup, getting in there by default as runners-up while Hajduk were employed elsewhere. And they stuck 14 past Luxembourg's Rumelange in that first round. Like Hajduk, they met Belgian opposition in the second round, but unlike Hajduk, Anderlecht would be where their adventure would end after a 3-1 loss over the two legs, and the Belgians would go on to take the trophy in the midst of a period where they would reach three successive finals. Finally, in the UEFA Cup, Zvezda were the only side getting past the first round, falling 5-1 on aggregate in the second round to Hamburg after having knocked out Universitaire Craiova in the first round. Vojvodina were taken out in the first round by AEK Athens. Domestically, it was close at the bottom of the league, but Vardar and Radnički Kragujevac would be relegated to be replaced by the one returning club in NK Zagreb and one new club to the timeline, Napreda Krusevac. When it came to the top of the league itself, the first thing to note before getting into it is to do with the rules of football and the history of stoppage time. Because at this point, it wasn't a thing. Sure, games disrupted by shenanigans would play out their allotted time in full, but there wasn't a mechanism for adding time for just the ball being out of play, as there is now, and any amount to be added on wasn't announced ahead of time. This is going to prove rather important. The second thing to note would be the events of the 9th of May 1976 and one of the most extraordinary results in the history of Yugoslav domestic football. Partizan, at that point 3 points clear at the top, were due to host Hajduk in second and Partizan were heavy favourites. Hajduk had found some late form in the league, but had been uninspired for much of the season and, like many, struggled to balance Europe and the league. To add to it, Partizan had won at Stari Plac and came in on the back of four successive wins, fired to those by the tremendous form of Nenad Bjekovic on his way to 24 goals that season. It was, pre-game, simply inconceivable that Hajduk would win. But what was meant to be a procession for Partizan turned into a massacre. It started evenly enough, Partizan keeping possession and Hajduk countering every now and then. But as the game continued, the tide slowly turned as Ivic's drilled style of total football pressed Partizan to destruction. It opened with a Zengul tap-in after great work from Boris Sidorjevic. On half-time, Ivan Buljan struck from 30 yards into the top corner to send Hajduk in at the break 2-1 up. Partizan came into the second half and continued playing the same way as they had before. After all, they'd had chances in the first half, good ones, so they saw little need to change things immediately. But instead of staging a comeback, the floodgates opened. 10 minutes after the restart, Hajduk would catch Partizan on the break, and Jerkovic would find Zubo on the edge of the box with acres of space to side-foot it in. Jerkovic would be next with a bullet of a low free kick 4 minutes later, and Hajduk weren't finished. After setting up the first, Djordjevic would become scorer, creating around the box on 68 minutes in triangles with the midfield before collecting a chipped ball over the defence for a simple finish. 11 minutes later, he would also add the sixth, heading in well from across on the right. Bekovic got the goal in consolation, but Partizan had been demolished. It was 6-1 at full time, and any doubt about just who the best side in Yugoslavia were had been eradicated. It still stands today as Partizan's biggest ever home defeat in any competition and is tied with their largest defeat ever. Partizan weren't even bad. Hajduk were simply on a level few teams have ever accomplished in the history of football. It was, without doubt, the pinnacle of Tomislav Ivic's Hajduk. They had taken Partizan's best shot and not just absorbed it, they'd returned it with 90 minutes of near perfection, owning Partizan on their own turf. When Partizan then lost to Sloboda Tuzla in the next game 3 weeks later, one could be forgiven for thinking that they had been broken. It seemed that the title was now Hajduk's to lose. Ivic himself was the only man striking a more cautious note, stating, "We will be champions only if they let us." Which brings us to the 11th of July, 1976. And the reason for talking about stoppage time. In certain circles, you are unlikely to find anything considered a greater controversy than what happened on this date. Nothing has ever been proven, and no real misconduct can be at this point. But it is worth already to jump back 20 years to when Hajduk were denied their place in the first European Cup and the general perception of Hajduk. As we know from back then, Hajduk's problem was in part the Torcida fan group, an organisation of tens of thousands built around something with no allegiance to the state. Hajduk were, in 1976, as they had been from 1950 onwards, not a side in favour with the ruling elite. And, just as in the 1950s, what happened on this day is seen to have been an example of anti-Hajduk bias, and perhaps of more import, the decision that ended a golden age. Partizan were away to Olimpia Ljubljana, while Hajduk were away to OFK. Hajduk drew with OFK and knew that Partizan were doing the same with Olimpia, and that, with Hajduk's vastly superior goal difference, the title was going to split. Had Hajduk won, they wouldn't have needed to wait for Partizan's outcome. And while the Hajduk players had finished, action in Ljubljana hadn't. 90 minutes came and went without a whistle as Partizan surged forwards and forwards, desperately trying to score. Officially, Nenad Bjekovic's poke home from close range would be registered as having happened in the 90th minute. In reality, it came in the 94th. Some sources will claim it as late as even the 99th minute. Partizan fans invaded the field and the match itself never restarted. Hajduk's efforts to match Partizan and Zvezda in attaining three titles in a row was over. Partizan were champions. Hajduk returned to Split with the bitterest of tastes in their mouths, but to an impromptu parade to celebrate the side, as fans, perhaps unsurprisingly, considered their players to be the moral victors of the piece. Unlike the San Etienne screwjob, for which we know what happened and we know how it happened and we have a confession, there is no proven malfeasance when it comes to the events of that final day of the 1975-76 season. Were it to have been a long-term fix, then it would certainly be ill-advised to try and fix a league where, if Hajduk had simply scored one more goal, it would have been foiled. By the same account, it would be an extremely poor fix to have it reliant on Partizan only scoring once Hajduk's draw was confirmed, given that, well, it wouldn't exactly leave much time to have Partizan score. Olimpia weren't in it, given that Partizan did have to fully earn their goal. Were Olimpia part of it, you'd suspect the other way to fix the league, Partizan winning by six clear goals would have been the way that would have been chosen. If there was any misconduct, it could only have been a one-man mission from the referee to allow Partizan a bit more time, and even then, that's an awfully risky way to try to impact a result. Perhaps the best explanation is simply that Partizan did win the title fair and square on their part, and had no part in that events around the title win seemed anything but fair and square. We will, of course, never know. But the result was always going to be embedded in the background paranoia of Croat-Serb relations. Hajduk had been messed around with before, and there was ample form in the book to suggest it may have happened again. Hajduk's golden age, much like Croatia's spring, had been silenced. Tomislav Ivic, after the game, would leave the club for Ajax, and Partizan would leave the title challenge for a couple of years. But next time on the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, we join with the national team again, and we prepare to get rid of the 1970s when it comes to the national team as well. But it starts with Yugoslavia hosting its first ever major tournament, Euro 1976. Thank you for listening. And much like last time, it will be perhaps a little longer till the next episode than usual due to my current house move. But I will catch you next time, whenever that may be.